warning. This song must be played at maximum volume.
It's the Mark Eisler Show.
That sounds good.
Live and local.
I like it very much.
Every Saturday night on AM 870, The Answer.
Exactly.
News, talk, and entertainment. So let the party begin. Here's Mark.
Yeah, I was just looking at, we have so many people in here, so we're going to do on the house party tonight. We have one special gentleman right away. We're going to give him some minutes because it's an honor to have him on, and my friend Terry Paulson. Let's introduce Terry first. Terry is a world-renowned speaker, but tell us a little more about yourself, Terry.
Well, I'm a psychologist by background, and I could have helped your last guest. You should have referred.
The enzymes need help.
The enzymes. Yeah. You know, I loved it. Started out as a professional speaker, and I also am a columnist with townhall.com. So I have a passion for speaking and talking about change and optimism, and at the same time expressing my opinion.
You wouldn't say this, but I know you're a phenomenal speaker on what do you talk about?
I talk about change and optimism, leveraging optimism to make change work. And so that's the focus of most of my work.
And you met your friend Hal, who you're going to introduce.
I actually have gotten to know him from a distance. He's like a phantom. He's all over the world talking about a cause that is very important to him and to a number of people from Biafra, which is a small indigenous people that right now is a part of Nigeria. And they have been attempting to have an independent state. And at a time when there is all this tension around the world between the Islamic Caliphate and different faith religions, mm-hmm. Nigeria is a battleground right now for that. Yeah. And Nnamdi is first and foremost a very brave man who continues to speak out. He is director of Radio Biafra, which mm-hmm. is a radio station that goes around the world and connects all those people from that region that live in other countries. And I'd rather not take a lot of time and let him talk a little bit about some of the issues that he's addressing.
And say your name, Nnamdi, right?
Nnamdi Kanu, yes.
Yeah, you say your name better than I did, well, which makes sense. And how did you meet Terry?
Exactly the same way he explained from a distance. We do have some common friends, I would say.
You have a lot of people with you.
Exactly. Yes.
Are they?
They're not minders anywhere. They're just.
No, but they're not here for protection, are they?
No, not at all. No.
Oh, they're all laughing about that. Do I need protection? Maybe I should ask.
No. At all.
So tell us about your country or your would-be country or what you'd like to have happen.
It was a country, actually, and it's been existing for thousands of years, as a matter of fact, before the British came, incidentally. And once they came, they decided to change everything. Turn everything upside down. And since then, we became Nigerians about 100 years ago. Exactly, 100 years ago. So and we've been living under the very, I'll call it burden or curse ever since. Because what happened was the mixing of people who are predominantly, would I say, in the modern parlance, Christians. And people with very strong sort of Islamic traditions. And mixing those two together kind of generated what you have today, which makes, as Terry said, Nigeria the killing fields, I would say, of Christians in that part of the world.
Although even in Iraq, you see they're trying to get rid of the Christians there, right?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. And so what are you trying to have happen?
What we want to see happen is to have a very independent, a sovereign state called Biafra, the way we were before the British came, to be more or less in charge of our lives, which basically hasn't happened now for about 99 to 100 years.
But I'm guessing the government in Nigeria doesn't want this to happen.
Yes, unfortunately, because and for good reason as well, because we produce almost all the resources that a country needs to survive. We have oil, so you see, and they need access to that oil to be able to fund their very lavish lifestyle, unfortunately.
So they're not going to let this happen, right? Not easily, right?
They may not let it happen easily, but they will eventually let it happen because I don't think they've got any choice right now.
Now, if I understand correctly, you understand the evil of radical Muslims, right?
Yes.
What they're trying to do.
Yes. What they're trying to do basically is to, they tried this before between 66 and 1970, which resulted in the loss of nearly 3.5 million people.
Unbelievable.
And it's rather unfortunate that the world never spoke about this. They never talked about it. I think we're only second to the Jewish Holocaust that happened in Europe. Mm-hmm. And they continued. Right now, up until this very moment, they're still killing, trying to forcibly convert our people to Islam, a faith we are not used to. We have our own way of life from time, but Sadly, that's what's happening.
You probably didn't hear my first hour, but some gentleman we had on last week, now he'll know who he is, who I'm speaking about, blogged about how, the president, President Obama, is doing such a great job not getting involved in all these conflicts. And my response, if I was going to respond to his blog, but as a talk show host, I try not to do that, is that these guys are evil. They want to take over the world. They certainly want Sharia law wherever they can, right?
Exactly.
And you understand that, right?
That's what they're doing to us, exactly. I mean, they forcibly take our women, unfortunately, from the streets and forcibly convert them to Islam and forcibly sort of assign them to who their future husbands are going to be without anyone saying anything about it.
As little kids.
Exactly, exactly. And their stated goal is to forcibly Islamize everybody living in that part of the world. And it's quite unfortunate because Biafra is the only piece of territory all across the stretch of West Africa untainted by Islamic influence. So they're predetermined to make sure that we sort of conform to their way of life.
I'm going to let my guests, my other house party guests, come in on this and introduce yourselves and any responses you have, because that could be our first question, which is the people who say, Iraq and Afghanistan, let them fight this out. And I'm not saying we should necessarily get in with troops or anything, but to understand that this is not going to stop there, that these people are trying to take over the world in their image, certainly to produce another caliphate. Do you want to react? First, introduce yourself, Tyler.
All right. Well, my name is Tyler Kateski. My credentials seem to kind of pale in comparison to our two previous distinguished guests here, but I'm a rising fourth year at UCLA studying history and political science, and I'm the secretary for the Central Committee of the Los Angeles GOP for the 54th Assembly District.
But you're a libertarian, right?
Exactly. I'm a member of the Republican Liberty Caucus.
So you're the guys, I'll pick on you, you're the guys, not you, who kind of want to stand back, right? Isn't that the Rand Paul idea and the Ron Paul idea that, you know, we shouldn't be involved in these conflicts all over the world?
Well, I think the best way to look at it is not so much not that we necessarily, by not wanting to get involved with, you know, ground troops or airstrikes or what have you, want these horrible things that happen. We just feel that oftentimes when the U.S. gets involved in lots of places, we can end up doing more harm than good. Like, for instance, when we intervened in Libya and unleashed a wave of radical Islamist activity that helped fund the Tuaregs in northern Mali and other places.
As if my guest would be able to respond to a Terry, as if there wouldn't be radical Islam otherwise.
Well, I think you have to look at it at how contained that situation was before we were in Libya and how much afterwards. And so I think if you see how U.S. involvement has affected that, it's a more complex picture than I think you might see it as.
And I don't want to dominate. And let's go to introduce next guest. Going to introduce himself.
I'm Gerald Jones. I'm the author of the lighthearted political satire and comedy, Mr. Ballpoint, which is about true story about the introduction of ballpoint pen in 1945, which created shopping riots that only were recently rivaled by the introduction of the iPhone.
He knows it's going to whet my appetite. Why did the introduction of the ballpoint pen create riots?
Well, the thing is that it was a knockoff, and this entrepreneur, Milton Reynolds, beat his competition to market. He made $5 million in 8 weeks back when that was real money.
And why was the ballpoint pen so special? I'm trying to remember.
Well, it wrote underwater was the one thing.
Wait a second. Who wants to write underwater?
Well,
I want to do a lot of things.
They still haven't figured that out, but it was one of the best marketing slogans that ever existed. And the thing did write on a damp newspaper. It also wrote at 30,000 feet, which was a practical thing because pilots were using them to write their flight logs. Fountain pen wouldn't work for that. And then they said, never needs refilling. Well, a fountain pen, you see, had to be refilled every 2 or 3 days, but, you know, you'd lose a ballpoint before we'd need refilling. So more to the point, I think I would agree with some of the things that Tyler is saying, in that, you know, we propped up, you know, the likes of Noriega and Pinochet and more recently Saddam Hussein, and even Osama bin Laden was, you know, kind of on our side for a while. And, you know,
very briefly, it became a radical. But go on.
We have this philosophy of political calculus of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And we should pick our friends because they're our friends. We should pick our friends because we want to hang on to them. And, you know, Biafra is very likely to be in that category. Certainly, my wife and I, Georgia in particular, is animal activist, and we've been to Kenya 3 times. And it's just so tragic to see not only the how elephant poaching and the international trafficking in cash and drugs and all the things that are involved in the way that it's plugged into political corruption is just so difficult to get past. Because
and you're agreeing with that?
Completely, absolutely. Because that's the point we've been trying to make to the U.S. government for a very long time. That you should be looking for your natural allies, not made up ones. Because Biafra, for instance, is homogeneously Christian. For instance, we share the same value system as the USA, liberty, free speech, all the rest of it. So why wouldn't a country like the USA tap into that naturally, knowing fully well that you have people there that will work towards your interest?
Let me challenge our next guest, Steve, who's going to introduce himself, because I think this president doesn't distinguish well between his friends and his enemies. He makes friends of people that you would think might be our enemies, like Iran, trying to negotiate with them. And Israel, our biggest ally in the Middle East, he's been so hard on them. But I'll give Steve a chance to introduce himself and his response. Steve?
Okay. Hi.
You probably have a book, too.
I do. It's right here.
Yes.
Here's my book.
Close the mic.
My name's Steve Bevilacqua. I am the author of Kafka at the Beach, a layman's handbook for those falsely accused of felonies, which is the funny chronicle of my legal nightmare. Basically, it's about how I almost went to prison for 2 years for getting hit by a car, and how Judge Judy ultimately saved my life.
She's really real, Judge Judy?
Oh, yeah. I believe Judge Judy is our modern-day Solomon. In fact, we should bring things like Biafra to Judge Judy. Probably get settled much more quickly.
Figures a liberal would think a court could solve something like that. But anyway, Steve, so the book is – you whetted my appetite, too. You knew you would. So you were hit by a car?
While crossing the street in Venice Beach, yes. Yeah. And by the time...
What are you doing living in Venice?
Yeah, I've lived
That's
in Venice for 20
problem,
years.
Yeah.
but by the time our justice system and the police were done processing this, the woman who admitted running me down in the street got charged with nothing. And somehow I got charged with a whole big long list of felonies, some of which came with mandatory prison sentences. And I was in court for a year fighting for my freedom and shelling out tens of thousands of dollars.
What felony were you?
All right, basically what she
jaywalking?
Said...
Jaywalking? No,
I was crossing at the crosswalk. Yeah. But the woman who hit me then said, yeah, I saw him. I didn't stop. And, yeah, I gave him the finger and I left and all the things that she did. But then she said after they caught her, she tacked on at the end. But after all that, he tried to grab my bag. So I got charged with felony strong-arm robbery.
Wow. This is a show in itself.
It was insane. Our legal system, our justice system is just
We might agree with that. But any response, Steve? And I'll give Gerald more of a chance. So Gerald was almost agreeing, I guess, that and I probably agree with this too, support our friends and certainly not work.
Well, I think, to perhaps broaden this discussion a bit, what happened in Syria was you could say it was an interesting experiment. We haven't seen what transpired yet, but I think there was an attempt by Kerry and the State Department to draw Putin into the role of peacemaker. In other words, they were trying to say to him, okay, you and Iran probably sold those nasty chemical weapons to Syria, and certainly you've been propping up Assad. Why don't you clean up this mess and we won't bomb anybody, and then you can come to the peace table and brag about being a world leader, which is what that was really the image he wanted at the Olympics. He didn't quite bring it off.
You and I have a different take. KGB guy, Altinudu, no good.
Yeah,
evil.
But he's basically a Western leaning capitalist when you really get down to it. He's not a.
Is this another one of your fiction books?
He's not a Soviet. This is not. There are interests in the United States that would like this to be the rewarming of the Cold War so that we can basically militarize ourselves again. That's not really what's going on. He's painted himself into a corner in Ukraine and rather stupidly, and so now for his political gain, he is trying to hold himself up as something of a warlord, but only because that we've allowed him to paint himself into a corner.
We've allowed himself to paint. Isn't that?
Well, I'm not saying that
that he ate Obama's lunch and he's taken over Ukraine.
All Obama's fault.
I love this. We're in different sides. Even Tyler disagrees with me.
Well, yeah, I think you got to consider he's an old Cold Warrior, right? So yeah. He's not. I think in that sense, he's probably a lot more like George H.W. Bush than George W. Bush.
Are we talking about Putin?
Yeah, I think he's got a lot more cold calculating strategy.
I think I still have the enzymes on the active ingredients on my show, on the Mark Eisler show.
Like us on Facebook. Just search for AM870, The Answer.
This is Mark Eisler for Visiting Angels. Like me, a lot of you are at an age where caring for an elderly parent goes from concern to reality. It's a shock and a real heartbreak to see your once strong parent no longer able to handle daily chores. But our friends at our local Visiting Angels office in Glendale can help you through it. Visiting Angels is a full-service senior home care agency providing a comprehensive range of non-medical services on an hourly basis. They have had the privilege of caring for thousands of seniors in the San Fernando and San Gabriel Valley areas in the last 10 years, with services such as meal preparation, hygiene assistance, and medication reminders. The client has the opportunity to interview their caregiver. The caregivers are experienced, have all passed criminal background checks, and are bonded and insured. I know the people in charge there. They help seniors to live safely and with dignity in their own home. I trust them to come through in your time of need. Call the Glendale Visiting Angels office at 818-549-1400. 818-549-1400. Take it from me. Call 818-549-1400 for your angel.
Read the latest headlines on our website, am870theanswer.com.
This is Mark Eisler for Galpin Motors. I have personally known Bert and his wife Jane Bachman, owners of Galpin, for years. Galpin Ford is the number one volume Ford dealer in the world for 21 years. How do they do it? Because their car dealerships represent the values they live by: hard work, exceptionalism, and giving back to the community. They value your business, and you will feel that the moment you enter their great showrooms or their in-house restaurant where you can relax while considering your new or used car options. I've been there. Or while servicing your car. The choices you have will only be matched by the deals you can make. Galpin is number one because they care about you as much after you buy the car as before you buy the car. Galpin carries 10 great brands including Ford, Lincoln, Jaguar, Volvo, Aston Martin, Lotus, Mazda, Honda, Spyker, and Subaru. I don't care where you live in Southern California. It's worth the drive to the dealerships, conveniently located right off the 405 in the San Fernando Valley. All I have as a talk show host is my credibility. I trust Bert Bachman and his entire family. For peace of mind, when buying a new or used car, go Galpin.
AM 870, The Answer.
This portion of the Mark Eisler Show brought to you by DiamondVeneer.com. Enter code RADIO to receive 50% off the retail.
This is the Mark Eisler Show, AM 870, The Answer.
You're walking along the street and you're at a party, or else you're alone and then you suddenly think you're looking in someone's eyes, you suddenly realize.
Mark Eisler, back with you again. And Terry Paulson, you wanted to, because I don't want to leave this yet. What were you going to say?
Well, one of the reasons I picked Biafra to write my column about is because I felt it has some unique factors as to why, at a time we're frustrated around the world, everybody kind of looks at the television set and says, I'm powerless. It's like I can't do anything about any of these areas. And Biafra is a place where the UN has really already established a declaration of the rights of indigenous people for independence. And 144 countries have validated that right. And you have an indigenous people that has a unique position to allow for independence. And at a time we're trying to deal with this whole issue, it seems to be a country both parties ought to be able to support. In fact, my understanding is that President Obama did endorse that Declaration of Independence. So he has been on line as saying that he endorses that. Now, what I want to ask you, what does it mean to have the UN do that? What are the next steps for you in terms of what you actually can do?
Yes, what we're going to do is to exactly follow up on what the UN did. Apparently, it was done under the, watchful eye of George Bush, is that correct, in 2007, is to set Africa on the path to genuine freedom. Mm-hmm. Because all the, what I refer to as abominable contraption by Europeans, all the artificial boundaries, all the colonial institutions, all the rest of it, is actually working to hamper progress in sub-Saharan Africa. That is the problem. That is the real fact of life. Mm-hmm. As I asked earlier today during our show, USA is a liberal Christian society, so to speak. Here you don't have any sultans. There is no emir. There is no emirate.
Well, he's trying. Go ahead.
Exactly. But where we come from, that is the order of the day. So we don't actually have any clear-cut, defined political institutions. It's just a mishmash of a bit of feudalism here.
One of the challenges I said last week is every country ready for freedom and liberty and democracy, right? You just said they don't have the institutions. You know, you can't transport liberty and freedom to every country. I would love to, right? But we learned even in Egypt that was difficult, right?
No, the thing is that we had it before even the Europeans came. Okay. We were the original democrats, so to speak. We never went to war. We never conquered anybody. Nobody conquered us. I think we are the only homogeneous, significant indigenous people all over the world never to embark on a war of conquest. Never, ever, ever. So we had well-grounded democratic institutions for running for thousands upon thousands of years.
That's great.
As soon as the British came, they turned everything upside down. Quite, you know, I would say very wickedly handed us over to the Emirates of the North, I would say.
Too bad. Well, we're on your side. And how can people get in touch with you or your movement?
Yeah, we are online and on Facebook as well. You just go to Radio Biafra London, Facebook. We are also radio show, as you know, on www.radiobiafra.co. We have significant presence all over the world. We are registered with the UN as well. And we intend to be carrying out a lot of activities in the coming months and years to ensure we highlight our plight to the world.
And how many languages do you know?
Two, fortunately.
Well, you speak this so well. No. I'm jealous of your sound. But let me ask a bigger question in this sense. I start to go there. I think we discovered, Tyler, you'll probably agree with me on this, that not every country can take on democracy or freedom. And yeah. Dennis, who I fill in for, I think he puts it very well. I really care about liberty, right? Because the trouble with democracy is they can vote it out, as they did for a while in Egypt, right? So we have to have countries and places that want liberty. Do you agree with that theory that not every country – you probably do.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's why, you know, we live in a constitutional republic and not a democracy.
That's correct.
So that way you don't have – like in ancient Athens, where you can banish someone from the city because you don't like them. And I think, yeah, then there's a lot of academic scholarship, at least, to suggest that you need to build up effective institutions to help sort of society to have kind of traditions and customs that it can follow before you can institute something like democracy.
How do you guys feel? Steve or Gerald, who wants to chime in?
Well,
Gerald?
I'd say that's one of the issues in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. In Israel, you've got an economically vital, viable country with a robust middle class of educated people. In Palestine, you've got, you know, or in the potential Palestine, wherever those boundaries might be, you've got refugees who are battling illness and don't even have the ability necessarily to get out and get any kind of education. So where's that middle class going to get built? You know, there. If we were to have a notional republic of Palestine, then, you know, somehow there's going to have to be an infusion of the bourgeoisie, if you will. I mean, the thing that really stabilized Northern Ireland was that IBM came in and put in a call center, and it became much more in everyone's interest to have stability and an economic environment rather than simply engage in the politics of no and disagree.
But I don't see that in an area where they have people in charge who want to wipe out Israel, as an example. That's not going to work at that part of the. What's your take, Steve?
I think many of these examples just.
That
really,
mic, you got to get real close.
Okay. This all just points out the real importance of the separation of church and state in countries like this. Huh. I mean, the second you can vote for a fundamentalist, you know, regime, then you have problems because then they just take away your right to vote.
You brought up a whole new thing because we don't have separation of church and state. It's nowhere in our Constitution. But I certainly don't want governments run by the church, but I'm sure you guys don't agree with me on that. Terry, you want to say something? We're going to hit that break, though. I think it's a hard break, which it is. So hold that thought on The Mark Eisler Show.
The place to be every Saturday night. The Mark Eisler Show, AM 870. The Answer.
Mark Geister back with you again, and I forgot about my callers as usual. And because my buddy, and he's staying up late in Memphis, Tennessee. Ken, are you there? Ken, are you? Hey, how are you doing? What did you heard? I don't know what you're doing your commentary on tonight.
Well, it's sort of consistent with what I'm hearing about right now. I've written a couple of City Watch articles on it, and I sent it to you. The conflict in the Middle East has really made. I've also been a student of history, and generally, in a nutshell, we all have a choice. The fact is that the United States of America was founded on the principle of choosing, and this is handed down from God. But we're not, you know, as much as America is called imperialist, we have to accept the fact that other peoples will make their choice. You know, take the example of Kurdistan. They made the choice to become independent economically and to not just fight and make war on their neighbors. And they made peace among themselves. This is an example of a nation that deserves its own homeland. Israel as well. You know, it was attacked and it took on a lot of wars and threats to its very survival. Gave back the Sinai, gave back the Gaza Strip, and now, for some reason, that's been declared the bad guy. Egypt realized that when you give entities like the Muslim Brotherhood the ability to run your country, the democracy will disappear. Unfortunately, that lesson was lost on the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, who, after a democratically elected Hamas militarily kicked out their political rivals, now has anything but a decent quality of life.
And by the way, Hamas, Ken, that's an example of what I was talking about. You gave a great example where they voted Hamas in. So it's not enough to have a democracy, right? You got to believe in liberty.
It is exactly that. And in Egypt, they've had to make, when you look at Libya and where they've gone, Egypt's made a terrible decision, but it's a tough decision. It's dreadful, but it's necessary. They're making the right one. Egypt is realizing that you're going to have to trample probably upon some civil rights of the Muslim Brotherhood. But the fact is if you play the, you know, traditional peaceful democratic game with people that have no interest in democracy, then you will lose because they don't play by the rules that everyone expects them to play by. And Egypt is doing the right thing. Gaza and the Palestinians are going to have to, maybe with Egypt's help and maybe with Israel's help, do the right thing in order for there to be peace in Palestine and become Palestine. They're going to have to be willing and able to just really put down the Hamas element among them and allow those who make money the ability to put down those who want to make war. And it's similar to the Northern Ireland situation. They had to put down the IRA. They had to recognize there are some people that don't want peace. That's all they know is war. And without war, they're out of a job. And if the Palestinians want to push forward, they've got to make the same choice. And to be honest, I think President Obama needs to make that choice. He needs to make it clear that we will not allow civil rights to be trampled because some people don't want peace. They want war.
And we have to distinguish that. Guests, anybody want to react to that? Either?
Well, one of the comments that that I had shared in the break was that I was in Israel at the time when Gaza was given back in 2005, mm-hmm. August of 2005, had the opportunity of talking to some of the business people and farmers, settlers who had left. One in particular said she had 4,000 employees, and they were Palestinian, and they were begging her to stay because as soon as she left – what ended up happening is all 4,000 lost their jobs, and they were all of a sudden on the welfare of Hamas, because Hamas is basically, their desire is not to create success for people, but to create dependence, because as soon as they have dependence, then they're dependent upon them for the welfare. And you see the same kind of industrial quality in southeastern, in Biafra, compared to the northern section where they keep them in poverty, where they can control them. And we had another one who actually gave his company to Palestinian workers that were there. And within 2 weeks, Hamas had come in and closed down the companies. They do not want them successful. And that is the real challenge. As long as their charter is the destruction of Israel, until that is dealt with, there will be no peace.
Right. Well, I certainly agree. Anybody else want to react?
I agree with that.
Steve, yeah.
I think that Hamas...
Thanks, Ken.
As soon as there is peace, then Hamas doesn't... It is in Hamas's best interest in there to not have peace. They are like an organization of war. On the other hand, for... What's it going to take for the Palestinians to give up Hamas, to disband Hamas? It's not going to happen.
No, I think it's going to be like the IRA, and not necessarily that. I don't see Hamas as an organization going away soon. Even though I guess we wish that would all happen, but I think what's have to happen is that they're going to have to change their charter so that they recognize Israel's right to exist and commit to only using peace.
It's not going to happen because that's not what they want to happen.
Well, that's what happened with the PLO, and I think that's the only way Hamas is going to get out of this alive. That would be the best solution.
Yeah, but they're getting money from Qatar, and that's what it's about too. They've lost those funds. Let's go to Tom and Glendora. Tom.
Hey, thank you very much, Mark. I've got to set the record straight on Vladimir Putin with a few simple facts. This guy, Vladimir Putin, is as evil as Stalin or Hitler, and the record proves it. He's an old KGB communist. He tried to murder by poisoning his food Viktor Yushchenko in the 2004 Ukrainian Revolution.
I remember that,
The Orange Revolution. He absolutely, and today's Wall Street Journal proves it, he poisoned and killed a very brave man in the Kremlin who tried to expose corruption under Putin. The guy's name is Alexander Litvinenko, and his widow gave an interview in today's Wall Street Journal opinion piece. He vilifies Ukraine and sends Russians into eastern Ukraine to try to take back the country. He put in Viktor Yanukovych as a puppet to corrupt Ukraine. The brave Ukrainians have fought back. He is now incontrovertibly sending missiles into Ukraine, as we see on the evening news. He certainly was behind the bringing down of the Malaysian airliner, which is just unconscionable. He's knocked down Ukraine military aircraft. The guy is as evil as they get. And for Obama not to speak out against him, not to absolutely ostracize him, for Europe not to do that, shows what danger we're in, I'm afraid, Mark.
Well, I have to trust all your facts because you pronounced every Russian name correctly.
Something like that. And I'm Ukrainian in ancestry.
Oh, see, now you have an inside advantage.
Yeah, I got a bias.
There we go. Any reaction, gentlemen? Anybody want to react to that? He made some good points, I guess. Yeah. Now we're going to go, we often switch to local stuff. And so let's go to Marcus in Westchester. Are you a first-time caller, Marcus?
No, I used to call you on KBC a lot. Okay. This call's going to be super politically incorrect, but there's been a couple of news stories regarding Jews in America that have really troubled me. The first is that the thousands of young Jews from America who have gone to Israel to fight for the Israeli Defense Forces instead of joining, let's say, the United States Army. And the second is Mayor Bloomberg, the former Jewish mayor of New York, who banned sodas in New York, but now is upset that the United States banned flights to Israel for like a day.
Well, at least give him credit for that, right?
No, it's probably bad because I think the United States is justified in banning flights.
Well, yeah, we may disagree about that because it hurt Israel, and I don't know why. So one rocket got close. I mean, all it did was...
An Air Canada flight actually had to circle multiple times because of Hamas rocket fire.
Yeah. Any comments?
I don't know. Quite frankly, we support Israel. My father's name is Israel, as a matter of fact, so... Quite naturally, and the fact that we share so many things in common as well. The same fate that is now befalling Israel befell Biafra and will befall Biafra in time to come.
Yeah.
You're dealing with a group of people who are diametrically opposed to every shred of common sense that exists. As Terrence quite rightly pointed out, is this culture of dependency trying to milk people's poverty as a way to accomplish some seemingly unachievable political goal or realization? The same thing happened when the British came. The British knew that the Northerners, the Hausa, Fulani people, never ever wanted to have their people educated. and that was going to create a problem in time to come. Yet they went ahead to support that. And that's what's happening today. Now they're terrified of being on their own or left without access or control of Biafran oil fields because they don't know where they're going to feed from. That is the problem. As long as you have that existence, as long as you have people willing and able to exploit the poverty-stricken state of mind of the people, there is no way you're going to have peace. Anyone thinking that someday you wish away Islam, they are living in a cloud cuckoo land, because that's never ever going to happen. They came into that very part of the world. The Fulani people came, conquered the Hausa people. You have the Hausa Fulani today in the Northern Emirates, Nigeria. The same jihadist tendency that occurred nearly 280 years ago is still ongoing till this very moment. It's never going to go away, unfortunately.
Unless we defeat it.
Exactly.
Marcus, I got to ask you, have you been listening to the show and this is the first time you called us on the new station?
Yeah.
Well, I welcome back, and I appreciate it very much.
Hey, thank you.
Absolutely. Guys, I mean, look, it's a tough world out there, right? But we have to make difficult choices, and we do have to support liberty and freedom like in Biafra and places and peoples that are on our side, right?
Well, a Kyle? Friend of mine is actually who I met in the Ron Paul campaign back in 2012 actually is one of those American people who are actually in Israel right now in the IDF fighting. And so I think, you know, if someone wants to make that personal choice, they should definitely be able to, especially if, you know, you're Jewish and you see that as defending your country. I think that's your prerogative, definitely.
Well, and I don't even – if you're an American is enough. You got to support those people around the world that are going to fight for liberty. We don't have that many left, right,
yeah.
Who show the courage like our guest tonight from Biafra.
And there was all that support, you know, at the very beginning of Arab Spring that, you know, hopefully there would be a model – you know, that Tunisia might actually make it to the other side and start to stabilize and then inspire the other Arab countries that were in various
states. But Gerald, I was doing the national show that day for Dennis, and I called it from the first day an Arab winter because I knew that what was going on. Mubarak wasn't, you know, somebody.
No, but my point is,
let me just finish and then react. Yeah. That Mubarak wasn't an angel, but you got to always ask, what's next? What's to follow this? Right. We can't live in a vacuum. But I said I'd give you a chance.
Well, I'm just saying that if to the extent that Biafra under UN sanction could be seen as some kind of model for indigenous people and self-determination, then don't we have a moral victory there potentially, even though it may seem from a geopolitical standpoint, oh well, you know, we can't really cut off access to oil anywhere. You know, that seems to be like 101, but
my Democrat friends, I want to challenge you. This president went on an apology tour, apologizing for America, when to the rest of the world we still serve as that beacon of hope and of freedom. And it just amazed me. Well, what are we apologizing for? Does he
drone
not?
Drone strikes.
Excuse me?
We could apologize for drone strikes that kill civilians.
No. But. See, you and I are going to disagree. That's one of the few things he's done that I agree with him on. Oh, my God. Are you Ron Paul people on the wrong side? But anyway, see how I pick on my own. Terry.
I had the opportunity of speaking at the same place that General Schwarzkopf spoke. Mm-hmm. And he had a very moving testimony of first Gulf War when they were leaving. And the first President Bush had decided not to go on into the area. And the Saudi generals were meeting with them, and they were kind of saying their goodbyes. And one of the Saudis pulled him aside and said, I need to talk to you privately. And Schwarzkopf, sure. And he came in with him. And with tears in his eyes, he said, I am glad that America is the only superpower left because you are the only one who would leave.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah. And he made that statement, and he said it stuck with him. I don't think Biafra wants America to come in and do all the work. I think they want to be free to do the work. They may need support. They may need weapons. They may need other kinds of things to deal with the challenges they face. But they need to have people in America stop thinking that we have to do everything, but we should be with our allies, and we should be very supportive.
And I think that's the one thing we've gotten out of this show, support our friends. And, you know, there's a few countries that are in the forefront of liberty as it is. Any reaction, Steve? I didn't mean to bowl you over on your first time on the show. Do you want to go back to your book?
No, I'd like to go back to what Gerald said. I really agree with the basic – making the distinction between who your friends are and the enemy of your enemy being your friend, because that gets you into a lot of trouble, and it has gone wrong.
But sometimes you don't have a choice, like between Iraq and Iran. I mean, right? We're not always given great choices. Sometimes we have to choose. And we worked with Stalin during World War II because Hitler was more evil at the time.
Yeah, but that's how the Taliban happened.
Yeah. No, Taliban happened without us. It's not because we
you
were there.
You read Charlie Wilson's word?
Well, I tell you, you Ron Paul people never stop amazing me.
It's a public record, but okay.
Yeah, no, Iraq and Iran, you got to go back to Mossadegh and are putting the Shah in place. And,
see, I would still want the Shah back. See how crazy I am?
But there's just so many missteps there of we should back this side, or we should back this side. Well, if we'd been in there, not mucking around with it so much, maybe it wouldn't be such a mess.
Really? Wouldn't be a mess without the United States
unintended
of America.
Consequences.
Oh my God!
I want to hear what does Biafra want from the United States?
Just support, essentially, not perhaps a very overt intervention, but just give us every necessary support to allow us to emerge as a free, libertarian, independent, sovereign nation. That's what we're asking for. The same way we were, mind you, before the British came. That's what we're asking for.
You'll have to wait for the next president.
Possibly, I said that actually.
On the Mark Eisler Show, it's good that we're doing foreign policy because it's all tied around Biafra. And I appreciate your thoughts on the Mark Eisler Show.
AM870, The Answer.
I always try to tell you about the excellent providers that I use. Dr. Arthur Fast is my podiatrist. Any foot or ankle problem can be corrected if you go to the right doctor. Dr. Fast is that doctor. You may go to him in pain, but you will leave feeling 100% better, no matter what your foot concern. Dr. Fass is your man. Call Dr. Fass at 818-701-5088. That's 818-701-5088. Call my podiatrist, Dr. Arthur Fass, at 818-701-5088.
Follow AM870 The Answer on Twitter, where you can talk amongst yourselves or with the guys in our back office with the pocket protectors.
This is Mark Eisler for Smoke City Market, and I have a special guest on, R.J. Beaton. We did this big event at Smoke City Market, a standing room only crowd.
We certainly did. I mean, what a great event, and I'll tell you, the food, I mean, unbelievable.
Well, everybody said that the food was fantastic. I got to tell you the story. I get here to KRLA today, and the receptionist says, hey, I heard about your show. I said, oh, it was a great show, right? She said, well, I didn't hear about the show, but I heard the food was great.
And the food is fabulous.
So for me, it's always the brisket. What did you have?
The lean, moist brisket. I mean, hey, I'm a big barbecue guy. I love barbecue food. It's hard to find here in Southern California. And, you know, this is straight truth out of my mouth. I'm not getting paid to say this, but by far, that's the best barbecue I've ever had in my life. And the smoked, lean, moist brisket is the only way. I mean, it's just melts.
But the pastrami is great, right?
Pastrami is great. The baby back ribs.
I took the ribs home. That was fantastic.
His side dishes, I mean, it's authentic Texas barbecue. And I mean, even the moist brisket, we didn't even put sauce on it. It was that flavorful and that tender that it just melts in your mouth. As a matter of fact, I'm going back probably again this week to get more.
Well, it's Smoke City Market, 5242 Van Nuys Boulevard in Sherman Oaks. 5242 Van Nuys Boulevard in Sherman Oaks, just north of Magnolia. Everybody said they're coming back for more.
Go out there and talk to Michael Gans. He's a great guy. He'll educate you on the process, and it's fabulous. Just off the 101 freeway at the Van Nuys exit, north of the freeway.
North
about
of Magnolia.
A mile and a half up on the right-hand side. You can't miss it.
Smoke City Market, 5242 Van Nuys Boulevard in Sherman Oaks.
Yum.
You're listening to The Mark Eisler Show, AM 870, The Answer.
Gentlemen, this is Jimmy Buffett. You probably never heard. The guys who don't have headphones can't hear him. But he was really big in the United States. So he's still around. Terry knows who he is. Tyler, you don't know who he is?
I know Jimmy.
Oh, okay. And I know Gerald and Steve probably know, right?
Sure.
Oh, you sure?
Yeah. No, I know you guys would know. Let's go to Linda real quickly. Linda, what's on your mind in Burbank?
I see a similarity between the Israeli-Palestinian, conflict, and over here where the illegal aliens coming from south of the border here.
Mm-hmm.
I see a parallel. A similarity. The difference is Israel is able to take care of themselves. You know, Israel is able to take on the Palestinians while our government is just letting them in, letting them in.
Any quick comments? Thanks, Linda. Any quick comments about the illegal immigrants?
The Congressional Budget Office just testified last week before Paul Ryan and said that one of the most significant things that could be done to not to balance the budget but to reduce the deficit would be to stabilize and legalize immigration.
Legalize, so have everybody around the world come in.
Well, I'm just saying.
I'm just clarifying. I'm not going
to
argue.
Having clarification of citizenship status and allowing people to come in legally and be employed and pay taxes would and Ryan looked at him like, "What language are you speaking? What did you say? No, I don't think I heard that."
Anybody else? Tyler, you're probably for it, right? You like open borders and.
I mean, yeah, different libertarians have different positions on it. I'm not quite an open borders person myself, but I do think that we need to really reform the citizenship process in the U.S. and make it a lot easier to get business visas, work visas, to be able to become a citizen much quicker.
So an orderly system.
Yeah, I mean, the freer you can make the movement of goods and people, I think the better and the more easy that allows free trade to be to its fullest extent.
As long as they come in a legal way, and as my friend said from Biafra, that they share our values, our way of life, and our history, because you don't want to let it – you might as well not have the United States of America if tomorrow you have all radical Muslims coming in, as an example, who want to impose Sharia law. Do you agree with me
exactly.
on that?
I do completely. And again, if you help, for instance, with establishment of Biafra as an independent nation – at least most of the problems you have with immigration from Africa will no longer exist, because rather than coming to USA, they will come to Biafra, because we value freedom, we value people, we value human rights and all the rest of it. As a matter of fact, we actually started asylum before any other person in the world, because as the name Biafra implies, it means people can come and join. As long as you're running away or fleeing from persecution, you can come there and become a part of us. Once you're willing to adhere to our value system, which is simply liberty and fairness for all.
Wow, what a unusual system, huh? No, I'm being facetious in the world today. Yeah, Steve?
I have a problem with the indignant attitude of people who just go on the radio and go on about we're letting them in to take our jobs. They're not taking jobs as CEOs. They're taking minimum wage jobs that need to get done. You know, I don't. It's the anger that I have a real problem with.
Well,
I don't understand.
You may be then you're addressing yourself to me. It's only anger because I want to keep the United States of America as the United States of America. And I just want people to share my values and way of life. I would take 10 million people in from Mexico tomorrow if they came here legally and there was an orderly system to get them in.
Great.
We're the only country in the world that doesn't have an orderly system right now. Mexico would never let people in. They kick them out of the country or put them in jail. That makes sense. You like our country? Want to have you in as part of the system, but we don't want to change the country. There's something special about America.
And there is, and if it's attracting the best of the other countries, that's what makes America strong. It is America.
Absolutely.
It's a melting pot.
Yeah, as long as you come here in an orderly process. I love what my new friend said. What was special, what I say in my speech is that, what do we have, a minute left, Vicky? About 2 minutes left? Three of us, we got a little time. What made America special, and I've been saying in my speeches all the time now, is this is the first time in the history of the world, with the exception maybe of Biafra, I don't know who's first, where we said, we don't need kings, we don't need tyrants,
exactly.
We don't need despots to tell us what to do with our lives. We are people who get our rights from God. And if the state can give you power, they can take it away. So I just want people, this is an exceptional country. I don't want to lose that exceptionalism. To the rest of the world, that's what we represent.
That is exactly the problem we had with the British. The British realized all these virtues and values that we had, and they wanted to take it away because we believe in equality, that the right of a human being is irreducible. Only it comes from God and not from man. We don't have any kings. We never had any kings for thousands upon thousands of years. There's a name where we come from called Chibeza, that God is king and not man. In fact, our good friend that wrote Common Sense, what's his name
Thomas
again?
Thomas Paine.
Exactly.
He Are mentioned you shocked that I knew that?
Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine. He mentioned that. And we are the only people that stuck to that very biblical tenet that only God is king.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. How can people get in touch with you again on the web?
Yeah, it's through Radio Biafra website, which is www.radiobiafra.co.
I love it. Tyler, what do you want to mention?
I think that while I think it's important that we have you know, legal immigration, streamline that system as much as possible. I think it's important not to antagonize the immigrants themselves just for the fact that they're Mexican or come from a different culture. I
don't care where they come from as long as they come legally.
Yeah, and I think that what it's good to realize is that a lot of these immigrants coming to this country are some of the most industrious, hardworking people out there, and we should be
welcoming
them. Although
you should be bothered
them.
By this, most of the illegal immigrants who come here, what do they want? More government, because they came from countries that had government, and they want more. They vote
I think for- if we set up a welfare state that encourages that, that's what we get.
Well,
but
you
I
and
think,
I are on the same side on yeah. that one. Anything you want to mention your book again, Gerald?
Mr. Ballpoint, A Story of Zany Entrepreneurship from a Progressive Democrat.
I love the title of the book, even if I didn't like the last part. Go ahead, Steve.
My book is Kafka at the Beach, A Layman's Handbook for Those Falsely Accused of Felonies. And I'd like to say best of luck to you with Biafra Nation.
Thank you very much.
Indeed.
Thank
you guys are a great panel. We couldn't do the show without Sholem and Ethan and Vicky and William, the whole staff. And I always finish the show the same way. You'll appreciate this, my new friend. It's a privilege to have a microphone in the greatest country in the history of the world. Until next Saturday night, I'm Mark Eisler.
Thanks for the memories of rainy afternoons, swingy Harlem tunes, motor trips and burning lips and burning toast and prunes.
How lovely it was.